You are listening to a Proper DBE podcast hosted by Georgia Abrams and brought to you by the Daughters of the British Empire. The Daughters of the British Empire is a 501c3 non-profit American Society of Women of British or Commonwealth birth or ancestry, sharing and promoting our heritage while supporting local charities and our senior living facilities across the US.
Good afternoon and welcome to episode 6 of a Proper DBE podcast. Over the years, the DBE has hosted several events demonstrating fashion through the ages. Katie and Linda both mentioned such events they hosted in their own states in our very first episode. So today we're bringing you the first of many episodes about traditional crafts, all of these ones including fashion in some way or another. We'll be talking about tatting, Dorset buttons, and historically accurate garments. Tatting is the art of making lace, and this episode specifically focuses on needle tatting. And Dorset buttons are a type of craft-made button originating in, you guessed it, Dorset, England. So pour yourself a cup of tea and get comfortable. We have some extremely talented women today, so let's hear who they are.
Hello, my name is Louise Churchill. I'm a member of the Mary Wollstonecraft chapter in Colorado, and I joined the DBE maybe 2 years ago now, and I work on numerous levels within the organization.
My name is Eileen Eddy. I'm a member of the Sir James M. Barry chapter in Toledo, Ohio. I am currently the regent. My mother was with the Canadian Daughters, and my great aunt that actually was the sponsor for my father to come into this country was one of the founding members of our local chapter. So kind of got a long connection with it.
I am also a member of the Sir James M. Barry, same family history, obviously.
My name is Nikki Russell. I'm with the Somerset House in Kansas. And this is my first year joined with them officially. I unofficially was with them at the end of last year. And I joined short version. I had a friend that joined and she asked if I wanted to join and I joined.
Now, for those of you in the DBE's Midwest District, you should have already received your invitation to the Midwest Organizers Meeting, where mother-daughter duo Alana and Eileen will be showcasing several period outfits to demonstrate the royal fashion of Queens throughout the last few centuries. Let's hear a bit about that.
Okay, so basically what I'm going to be doing is a thing on dressing pretty much the Queens of England, starting back in the Renaissance era, hitting the 18th century, 19th century, early 20th century, and Queen Elizabeth and her youth. And I'm going to be taking along some of my gowns that are representative of each of their respective time periods as something that each of these, you know, women could have logically have worn during their lifetime and their time on the throne.
And are these all gowns that you've made yourself?
Yeah.
How did you get interested in doing that kind of thing?
I started out mainly sewing because I got into community theater and working with the costumes in that, but I also had an interest in historic costumes that I wasn't really aware of until later when I started thinking about it, that I had, like, you know, the American Girl dolls as a kid, specifically Felicity, and I, like, always, like, had, like, all the fancy clothes for the doll and thought, man, I wish they made dresses like this for me. Oh, well. Well, that could actually be arranged to exist, and finally I figured it out, and I could make them myself.
Eileen, was this an expensive hobby to get your child interested in from an early age?
Well, actually, I'm going to say she was pretty early age. I kind of got the same hobby from years ago. Mine basically started from my father, who was a Gordon Highlander commando and yet wonderful with a sewing needle.
Oh, wow.
And he used to do my costumes as a child. He made me into the executioner from the Tower of London at the age of 7. Later on, a crusader. And his family was theatrical. My grandparents actually lived off of the theater. My grandfather was the conductor at the Royal Lyceum in Edinburgh. And from having a theatrical background and him, I think I got very interested in costuming sewing. So I tried to start Alana out early with the sewing. Did her costumes for shows until she was later on. At about 16, she took over and started to do her own costumes. And yeah, it's an expensive hobby, but she gets to pay for it herself now. Self-supporting on that. Thank you.
Also, thrift stores are a great way to find cheap fabric.
I want to move over to Nikki quickly. And what is your craft and how did you get into it?
Well, the one we're talking about today is needle tatting. Mm-hmm. But how I got into it was actually through another craft. I was at the Renaissance Festival with my husband, and there was a group there called the Cross-Eyed Lacers, or the Royal Lace Makers, who do historical pillow lace. They had a free pillow, and they let me sit and make my own first little bookmark. And I got really interested in it, and I wanted to stay there all day. And so my husband went away. He came back. I was like, no, I'm not done yet. They were willing to let me stay. And basically, they never got rid of me. And that was at the end of 2015. But I have what I affectionately call crafter's ADD.
Sure.
So if I see anything interesting, I would want to try it. And our guild does all historical, what we call fiber arts, are welcome, especially if they fit within the time period. And many of our members do either shuttle tatting or needle tatting.
And Louise?
I make Dorset buttons. They're a type of thread button that was used for about 300 years, starting in the late 1600s. I started because A, I'm from Dorset, so it's part of my heritage. And B, a number of years ago, my husband and I went to a Revolutionary War encampment, and my husband enjoyed the guns and all that sort of thing and decided he would join up, which then meant that I had to start doing research on how to make all of the period correct clothing. And it's pretty strict. You have to have numerous pieces of evidence to support your particular item of clothing. And when we got to doing men's shirts and what buttons would be used during the Revolutionary War, it triggered a memory about Dorset buttons, and that kind of set me off on learning how to make those and my crusade on how I was going to prove their worth in the annals of history.
Are Dorset buttons something that either of you have come across in your historical research of fashion? Or
I've seen numerous examples of them on, period garments. I am aware of some other people in the internet costume sphere that, have made them. I personally don't have any hands-on experience with them. But yeah, I'm familiar with the concept of
them. Yeah, and I have one piece of vintage clothing that has them on, about a turn of the century jacket that has them. But other than that, I have never made
them. I've heard of them in passing.
I had never heard of them until I got this email all about Louise, and then she responded to that with an article that she had written. So I learned something new from all of this. Are they hard to make?
No, not really. There are many different types, and they range from something you could, a button that you could make within 10 minutes to 30 minutes. They're not the hardest of thread buttons that I've ventured to make. Death head buttons are a little harder. When you're making the Dorset buttons, you're dealing with linen, which is a reasonably okay thread to use. When you're looking at death head buttons, which is basically usually a silk thread that's wrapped over a mold, that can get a lot more complicated.
So Nikki kind of talked a little bit about the Renaissance Fair. How did you get involved in that? Did you join the guild after you picked up this craft? Were you visiting that day and then you kind of got involved after that?
So no, actually, I had minimal crafting experience. Me and my husband just enjoy going to the Renaissance Festival every year. We go multiple times a year. There was an incident the last time we went where basically my husband owed me one and we could do whatever I wanted instead of what he wanted. And like I said, the group was already there. They do historical lace making. If it fits the time period, they try to display it because it's a dying art. So there was a day I was sitting with them and I didn't have a pillow to make lace with, but one of the other women had a needle and a ball of thread and they were tatting with that. And I was like, what's that? And they told me about tatting. And I remember my great grandmother tatting. People are more familiar with it with the shuttles. And that's how I was familiar with it. I didn't realize you can make lace on a needle. Because we also call it needle lace or shuttle lace. The needle lace is more historically appropriate for the Renaissance Festival. It wasn't known as tatting back then, but it is appropriate for that time period. It's a really relatively cheap craft to start because you just have to buy a thing of needles and you just have to buy some thread. If it became too overwhelming to do the pillow lace, because that is a lot, or if we were in a smaller space where having that much equipment wasn't practical, I picked up the needle tatting as a fun way to pass the time and to keep the craft from dying out, because the craft is dying out.
A lot of traditional crafts are, unfortunately. Alana and Eileen, I think I heard that you are also involved in Renaissance fairs. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, pretty much just as attendees. I'm not a member of the SCA or anything, but yeah, the Renaissance fair is great. Unfortunately, the closest one to us is 90 miles away, that we can only, can't spend every weekend there like I'd want to.
And the same here. I like it for outlet for having a reason to make another costume.
I have attended the Kansas City one a lot, which I'm sure is the one that Nikki's talking about. But again, when I lived in Kansas, I lived 2 hours away. Louise, what side did your husband get involved on? Did he fight for the British or the Americans?
It was the American. It was he had an ancestor that was pretty influential in the Revolutionary War in Connecticut. And this was a Connecticut militia that was stationed here in Colorado. He was on the American side. And we would do many public functions where we would teach the public. As soon as I opened my mouth to talk about my thing, everybody was up in arms. You're on the wrong side, so on and so forth. And I'm like, well, with this accent, technically I'm not, but.
I remember when I was in high school, it must have been, my second or third year after we had moved over here. And one of my friend's little brothers just came running towards where we were all standing, yelling, "Red coat, red coat, the British are coming." And I was so embarrassed. Are there any crafts that you would like to try that haven't been able to, or they're too expensive to just pick up?
I have many crafts on the back burner.
Yeah. What other crafts are you involved in right now?
I got the bobbin lace and tatting. I am learning to crochet. I am learning to sew. That's been more interesting than anything because we try to have historically accurate costumes because we're not characters. My group isn't characters. We're basically living history. And then there's spinning your own yarn. I won't say I can do it, but I have the equipment to do it. Quilting and other things like that, that slowly I've picked up a piece here or a piece there. I can't confidently say I can do it, even badly. Not yet.
Alana, what about you? Are there anything that you would like to do or any other crafts that you do?
So the thing that I haven't had on yet that I actually got supplies in the mail for is Warbla, which is a thermoplastic that can be molded with heat for cosplay. And I've done some foam crafting with armor and stuff, but it didn't turn out that well, so I'm going to try Warbla this time. I also, in the costuming, that includes everything pretty much but shoemaking that I do, from, the undergarments to the outer gown. I'm also working on recovering and refurbishing several antique parasols.
Oh, wow. Eileen, what about you?
Basically, all I would like to do is get into hat making further, because Alana already is, in my opinion, expert at it. She builds them up from the frame with the wires and the buckram and makes bonnets that are Regency and spoon bonnets and stuff from the Civil War era. I have not done that, and I want to branch into that. That's my
Cool. Louise?
I wouldn't mind learning how to make lace.
Pillow lace or needle lace? I got you on both.
Yeah, Nikki can teach you.
Either one, they say, is actually not hard to learn. It just takes a lifetime to master, is what they say.
Yeah. No, I'm to be honest, I don't know which I would prefer. Whichever's easiest.
Depends on the pattern and your patience level. That's another reason I say I have crafters ADD. I have a pattern on my pillow for the bobbin lace currently that is frustrating me. It's not hard. It's just tedious. And fortunately, I'm OCD enough that if I make a mistake, I have to undo it and then redo it. So I had to put it aside for a bit. And then I started tatting a bit more just to take a break.
I am not a particularly crafty person. I cross stitch and I crochet. I would really like to learn how to use a spinning wheel. I think that would be a fun one. I have a drop spinner, but I am not very confident with it. I've barely used it, and I would really like to sew.
I got a hookup with a spinning wheel.
Oh yeah,
not me, but one of the women in our group does spinning.
Well, I am planning on coming to the Kansas City Renaissance Festival this year, so it's a longer drive for me now.
Cross-eyed lace makers down by the night will have a spinner.
Good to know. To bring it back to the DBE a little bit, have any of your chapters participated in anything that utilizes your craft? Some chapters will knit hats for preemies or, you know, stuff like that. Have you found a way to utilize your abilities to do anything for the cause?
Not yet. I've been trying to.
And yeah.
Alana has some really great ideas that she's going to put forward, but we haven't done it yet. And I haven't been really in a position to do much with them until I became regent. And that's all been during COVID and Zoom.
Not necessarily the craft per se, because I would make and sell the Dorset buttons. I have a number of friends that have bought buttons from me that belong to the Colorado Button Society. One of those members recently donated bags and bags and bags. And I'm talking trash can size bags, not shopping bags, full of buttons that she had collected that were just really just for crafts and things. She donated that to me and just said, you know, just put them to good use. And so I made out of these craft buttons, oh goodness, something like 68 sun catchers for people to hang in their garden. And we sell those through the chapter to raise money.
Do you have any questions for each other about each other's crafts or experiences? Or?
I'm interested in the Dulcet buttons. Like I said, I've heard about them, but I've never had a chance to see them made.
There's lots of videos that you can watch. There are many more famous than me, let's put it that way, ladies that are from Dorset that have websites and videos that they do where you can watch them being made. In fact, the history of them, they believe that the buttons were started by the Huguenots that were famous for their lace making, that came from France into Dorset to escape the religious persecution. And they believe it was that community that started making these buttons. And they were predominantly just on men's shirts. The women didn't have buttons then. They were ideal because they could withstand the rigors of washing, because a shirt was an undergarment, and so they can withstand being boiled and so on and so forth. Plus the sheep that were from Dorset, the Dorset horn sheep, it was very easy to just use their horn and use their wool to make the first Dorset button, which they believe is the high top and the Dorset knob. So there's a connection there, you know, with the lace making. And I know further on, once you get into the Regency period, you'll find that anything lacy, when women started using buttons, that's when the Dorset buttons made a very brief reappearance, if you like. It was all over and done with once the button machine was invented in 1840 something. They've tried to revive it a couple of times, but it's great now. In the I mean, you just go on Pinterest and you can find, to your heart's content, all the variations and the way that it's been modernized to make quite beautiful buttons that can't really be used as buttons, but they're still really pretty works of art.
Alana, do you have a favorite time period? You know, you mentioned several, and obviously each century has, you know, different trends, different fashions. Do you have a favorite?
So I would say that really the late 18th century is probably one of the best, in my opinion, like the mid to late 18th century. Also, like, natural form period, so that would be late 1870s, so you've ever seen Age of Innocence, that type of book. Yeah, so those are, like, two of the ones that I'm, like, really, you know, love at the moment, as well as, like, Edwardian with, you know, the trumpet-shaped skirts and stuff, the very soft and flowy. But I'm currently working on Regency.
Nice.
Nice little tie in there. Eileen, do you have a favorite?
I love the look, actually, about the Civil War era. I think it's so graceful because of the small waists and the big hoop skirts and stuff. I really enjoy that. But I like anything, really. I just love clothes. So,
yeah,
I enjoy any era.
It's a really interesting way to look at history, I think, because fashion follows what's available. And so it's just a really interesting lens to see what was going on in the world and how that affected fashion. So
in terms of working, because I always had to work in my outfits and fully be immersed in the time period, I preferred Edwardian. It's just far more comfortable. Yeah. I mean, you appreciate wearing the stays when you're lugging water around and putting up tents, and it's great support for your back, but boy, it's great to take that off at the end of the day. Oh, yeah.
Nikki, can you talk a little bit about the guidelines that you mentioned about for your historical dress?
So we wear, we go to a couple different events. Mainly it's Renaissance and Civil War. Panama lace was common in the Civil War. We have a couple different, depending on comfort level, as Louise said, you know, you could do stuff, but if you do it in full gear, it can be very exhausting. But we have our royal, because we're technically, we could be owned by the king and queen, because lace is a status symbol, therefore us lace makers are owned by them. So we can dress up in full regalia, as long as we're not wearing royal colors like blue or purple. And then we have our peasant gear, because technically speaking, lace in general, needle lace or pillow lace, was called a penny lace, or it was a cottage industry. So you would have a guild or a group or a family that would all do it, and that's all they did every day. And they were actually usually quite poor, unless they were patronaged by a royal member. And in the Civil War, it was more something for the women to do that was appropriate, an appropriate craft that the women could do. And it could be sold to make a little extra money for the family if it was part of their everyday life, if they were good enough at it. So most of our gear is what I would more term as peasant garb, because we're not the ones making the money off the lace.
Right. Take this opportunity, you know, is there anything that you want people to know about your crafts, you know, especially when they're dying out, they're being forgotten? What would you tell people?
Give it a chance. A lot of people think it's harder than it is, sometimes for a lack of patience. Like I said, I have those moments too, but I don't think anything is necessarily hard to learn. It can be hard to master, but not necessarily hard to learn. And I think that's what makes it fun, though.
Yeah, the same thing. It's not as hard as it seems. Basically, with sewing, you're just attaching shapes to other shapes is what you're doing. And also, anyone that's interested in, you know, trying this out or learning more about the historical costuming community, there is a large and avid community online on YouTube, the costume community. Tons of us are on Instagram. You know, all you need to look for is historical costuming, historical sewing, and you will find a lot of people that are very into this craft.
You know, if you're somebody that knits maybe or crochets, don't limit yourself in terms of buttons. A Dorset button is easy to make and it's a really good option for anything clothing wise that you make and beyond. Lots of people make them for decorations now too, so you know, the sky's the limit, really. Check them out.
Okay, all I was going to say is mine isn't so much about actually the craft, because sewing is sewing, but I think that the historic, it connects you to your heritage. There's so much of what like Alana's doing and I do, where we've done things like she did an Anne Boleyn, things like that. And I think you see history in a different light when you're able to create what the people actually wore, actually get the experience of wearing it. So I think it's kind of important to keep historical fashion and the recreation of it, because I think it helps in the history line. I wrote a historical two-woman play that we do for the continuing ed here. And Alana and I have done this, and we do it in Civil War costume. And I think it just brings everything home of what the makes the people more realistic, instead of just a bunch of sepia-toned photos or old paintings in a museum. Alana does a YouTube channel where she does people dressing up like in the 1880s, etc. And I think it just gives you, I think it takes history to another level when you can do it through clothing and the experience of wearing it. So that's why I think it's a good thing. And it, again, your heritage comes into that so often.
Is there a traditional craft or dyeing art that is part of your heritage, or is your hometown famous for such? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us all about it in an email to dbepodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to apologize for the audio issue in this episode, and I'd like to thank Louise, Nikki, Eileen, and Alana for joining me today. You can check out pictures of their work on our DBE National Facebook page or on our Instagram account, DBE National 1909. You can also see some pictures from those DBE Fashion Throughout the Ages events. If you're just stumbling upon the DBE for the first time and you'd like more information about our organization or how to join, you can find us online at dbenational.org. So until next time,
not ourselves, but the cause.